You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And as you get up with us, we welcome you back to another hour of Get Up, coming to you live, as always, from the Seaport District at Pier 17. We are brought to you by Chase. I am Greeny, and we are busy with an interesting basketball game we'll get to momentarily, but we're getting up with a day we've been waiting 2 years to arrive. Finally, decision time for Dak and Dallas. Will they get a deal done? We've got the very latest. Plus, one of the biggest decisions will be in Green Bay. Could one of Rodgers' biggest weapons be on his way out the door? It's tag day, and we're all over it. And then there's one team that absolutely has to find a way to land Deshaun. We'll tell you which team and why as we get up with you starting right now on a day that has been circled on a lot of people's calendars. It is the first day NFL teams can begin applying the franchise tag to free agents, otherwise known as Dak Prescott Day. Pretty much the conversation that we've been having for 2 years and more. He was tagged last year. He may play under the tag again at a cost this year of $37.7 million. And joining us here is our Dak Prescott insider, basically, as I know him at this point, the one and only Ed Werder. Ed, where do I begin? What is the latest at this point on Dak and Dallas?
You know, Greeny, as you know, this has been the most impossible negotiation for Jerry Jones in his 33 years as Cowboys owner. Unable to achieve a successful outcome last season, the Cowboys paid Dak Prescott a team record $31.4 million to play just 5 games on the franchise tag before his season-ending injury. And now, unless they reach a multi-year agreement that's been so elusive, they have to decide whether to commit $37.7 million without knowing if he's fully recovered from the injuries, just to see him play another season in a Cowboys uniform, accepting all the while it could be his last in Dallas, as he's a mere 16 games from unrestricted free agency. If the Cowboys follow the course they took last year, they won't franchise tag Prescott until the March 9th deadline. Then it was 3 months, Greeny, before he signed the tag and guaranteed his 1 year salary as the worst possible outcome. But all that really assumes a lot, because there are significantly different factors at play this time. Issues seeming to make it so much harder to do the deal. The salary cap expected to decline by as much as $18 million per team. The cost of the franchise tag for Prescott, $7 million higher. He's coming off the first major injury of his career. Any one of these factors could change the approach of one or both sides. And then there's this. There's always a certain level of unpredictability with Jerry Jones, and it's probably exaggerated by the fact the media covering the team has had no access to him, so his thoughts as the season has unraveled. The post-game interviews where Jerry takes questions just as soon as he departs the locker room didn't take place even once during the pandemic, so we don't really have a sense of what Jerry's thinking is on this and other major off-season decisions. And, of course, Greeny, Dak hasn't spoken since the season ended.
No, but Dak has just sat back and watched his leverage grow and grow, and Jerry, I guess, to some degree, has seen the opposite. So, Ed, in the... what are the other options? I mean, we're going to talk about this with Mike Tannenbaum in a moment. Is the idea, if they recognize that franchise tagging him this year is such an unappealing option because of the finances and because he'd be 12 months away from walking away as a free agent, are there any other options for the Cowboys if they don't get a long-term deal done?
Well, I think it would be negligence on the part of Jerry Jones and the Cowboys front office if on March 9th they don't have a sense that they're going to be able to get this deal done long-term with Dak Prescott. Even if they franchise tag him, I think they have to consider drafting a quarterback with the 10th overall pick. That's the highest pick they've had since 2016. With quarterbacks available in this draft and continuing uncertainty about Dak Prescott's long-term commitment, I think they would have to consider drafting a quarterback, even though that's not the way Jerry Jones has operated. I mean, he's only done that once, and that was the first year, 1989, drafted Troy Aikman, number one overall. It's not a philosophy that he's generally embraced, but it did produce 3 Super Bowl wins, the only ones that have taken place in Dallas since Jerry's owned the team.
That's outstanding. Ed Werder, thank you. We will be leaning on you through this process. We'll come back to you for sure. Thank you. Let me bring the crew back in here. That's an interesting one. And Mike Tannenbaum, let me start with you, because you brought up earlier the idea that if the Cowboys can't get a deal done, they have to consider trading Dak, a sign and trade, which is a possibility. That's what I thought Ed was about to say. I did not expect him to say they have to consider taking a quarterback at number 10. As a GM, what do you think of that idea, Mike T?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and I think Ed used the right word, which is Dallas has been negligent to be in this position, and now they have to explore all options, because if they don't get a deal done by March 9th, this is really important, Greeny. It is a massive, massive difference from a year ago. A year ago, they put their feet up on the desk and say, hey, no problem, we got him for another year. Now he's 12 months from walking out the door and getting virtually nothing. So a sign and trade has to be in the mix. Drafting a quarterback 10th overall, as Ed's saying, has to be in the mix. And I would exhaust every reasonable opportunity to get a long-term deal done. But if I can't, by March 9th, I got to consider the alternative, because the worst thing that could happen if I'm the Dallas Cowboys is he plays on a one-year deal and then goodbye. And now you're starting from scratch in 2022 with no quarterback and no plan. So you have to fix it right now.
Jeff Darlington, it looked to me like you were shaking your head. Why was that?
Because I lost my IFB, but I also would shake my head about the fact that Dak Prescott is not signed to a long-term deal. And by the way, the thing that we keep having to remind ourselves here is last year the issue was the years of the contract. 4 years is what Dak wanted. The Cowboys wanted to get him under a five-year deal. So what happens this year? Is Dak going to say, I want a three-year deal? And to Mike's point, if you do then tag and trade him, is an organization on the outside going to say, yeah, we'll just give Dak whatever he wants after giving him up, giving up a couple of first-round picks? So for the Dallas Cowboys, once again, they have pinned themselves into a corner as each day has passed, to the point where it feels to me like it's going to be very difficult to bridge the gap that has widened since 2 years ago.
So, Lewis, help me here. I mean, it seems to me I didn't think this could possibly get worse. Until the idea that they might draft a quarterback at number 10 to hedge against this possibility, for a team that needs everything, that all of a sudden it got even worse. So how did they get themselves into this position, Lewis? And more importantly, how do they get themselves out?
Again, they got themselves into this position because for some reason in the contract negotiating process, they didn't feel as though giving Dak the years that he wanted on the contract really fit into their long-term plans and was in their best interest. And it was a sticking point. It doesn't sound to me, based on the reporting that all of our great reporters have done, that the average per year was the issue. It was the length of the deal was the issue. And sit there and you think, now, what is Jerry thinking now about this? Was it really worth that at this point in time now, given the position that they are in? Because they put themselves in this position because they didn't want to move off of those years, it sounds like. How do they get themselves out of it? That's a great question. Look, I think Ed brings up a great point. I think, you know, the draft now has to come into play. It's hard to fathom. Mm-hmm. It's hard to fathom Dak Prescott not in a Dallas Cowboy uniform. It really does, especially considering the fact that, look, we keep talking about all these off-the-field type of machinations, but really, when you look about on the football field, this guy is deserving of getting the contract that he wants and the years that he wants relative to his importance on this football team. I mean, I would have been willing to concede that to him, given what he means to this football team. And the fact that they haven't done it now, as Mike has alluded to, now you're less than a year away from him walking in free agency and you getting nothing. You're right now up against it salary cap-wise, considering the fact that the cap is going to come down and his franchise number continues to go up. I mean, it's a terrible situation that really doesn't have really a good solution in the end, Greeny. It really doesn't. Dallas is going to take a loss here. This is not going to be a win-win. Dak's going to win. Dallas is going to take a loss in this situation no matter how you cut it. And they don't have anybody to blame but themselves.
Correct. And so let's finish it with this. Mike T, I'll make a statement and you tell me if you think this seems right. I'm not an expert in negotiation and Jerry Jones is. But at the end of the day, it seems to me, if you don't make a deal because of circumstances like the ones we believe have held this up over a year here or a year there, it means you're willing to accept that the final outcome of this is that you don't wind up keeping the player for the long term. There's no other way to read this, Mike T, because Jerry Jones is a very smart man who's been in a trillion negotiations. The only reasonable expectation here we can have, Mike Tannenbaum, is that Jerry Jones is willing to live with Dak Prescott not being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
I don't think that's it. I mean, and that's what's so fascinating. I think this is a man for 30-plus years has gotten everything he's wanted within reason. And I think he's sitting there saying, like, I'll figure this out when I'm ready to on my terms. And Greeny, I think you're bringing up a really interesting point. I don't think he's processed that they're going to probably lose this player within a year, and there's going to be absolute capitulation between now and March 9th by the Cowboys, by Jerry Jones, to get this deal done.
Well, there better be, because otherwise this is a mess of their own making, and they've got 2 weeks to try and clean it up. All right, we'll take a short break. We're just getting started. Coming up, Aaron Rodgers is about to lose one of his most important offensive weapons, or at least it appears they may. A big decision coming in Green Bay. And then LeBron unloads on load management. Does the King need more time on the bench? We'll answer that question and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
All right, we're back on Get Up, and I'm sure you saw this over the weekend. A high school football player seen video trash-talking Cam Newton. The young man has apologized for the exchange, which went viral. It occurred during a football tournament. Here's what it sounded like in case you missed it.
You're a free agent. You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent. You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
He's a free agent.
I'm rich.
He's a free agent.
Where's your daddy at? Let me talk to your dad. Let me talk to your dad. Where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
Where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
You're
a free agent. You ass.
Talk to him. Where's your dad? Where's your pop?
So again, this was at a football camp. The camper issued an apology on social media saying, in part, first and foremost, I want to express my deepest apologies to Cam Newton, my entire organization, and my coaches for my actions at the tournament this weekend. I did not intend for it to get as far as it did. As a football player, I let my competitive side get the best of me, and it was a huge miscommunication. I will tell you, I first saw this because Lewis Riddick commented on it on social media this weekend. Lewis, that was how I first became aware this had happened. And I was moved by your reaction on social media, so I wanted you to share it here. Now that, again, the young man has apologized for the incident, what is your takeaway from the whole thing?
Look, you know, Greeny, what it took me back to, quite honestly, was like when I was a kid, when I was in 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, and my brother and my cousins were playing at the professional level, and I was around locker rooms with guys like, you know, James Lofton from the Green Bay Packers, and was introduced to guys like John Jefferson, and I was around guys like Jim Haslett and Joe Ferguson with the Buffalo Bills, and Daryl Talley, Cornelius Bennett, all these guys. I mean, I couldn't imagine at the time, no matter what point in their career that they were at, ever talking to them with that kind of disrespect and or telling them that they're a free agent or that, you know, they're washed up or that their careers, their skills were diminishing, and just feeling as though like I had the right to even talk to someone that way, regardless of whether or not they truly were on the downside of their career. And it really bothered me that we're at a point now that for some reason, some way, shape, or form, that we feel as though we're entitled to do that kind of thing. You know, that whole fan perspective, that whole BS perspective about, look, we pay their salaries, we're allowed to, you know, we have a right to express our disappointment and or our opinions. Yeah, you know what? Maybe you do have a right to express your opinions, but there's also something called respect, and there's also something called decency. And I don't really give a damn what you think about Cam at this point in his career. He doesn't deserve to be talked to in that way, in that forum, in front of other people, given everything that he's accomplished, because I just never would have dreamed of doing it. And look, I didn't really need my parents to tell me that that's not the right thing to do. But right now, I mean, we're failing in some way, shape, or form if the youth of our country feels as though they have a right to talk to people that way, in any kind of forum, quite honestly. Whether, and it doesn't, it's not just involving sports, with anyone who is in positions, you know, where they have attained something that we are aspiring to be, or they have attained some kind of status that we are aspiring to try and attain, and they've set a good example for us. So it just really struck me the wrong way. I'm not shocked by it. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happening throughout our society right now. And quite honestly, I said, look, instead of being too shocked about it and spending too much time being angry about it, try to do something to change it. Try to do something to positively impact the youth of our country. And so that kind of thing doesn't happen, because it's something that really, really just rubbed me the wrong way.
Now, I can see there's a lot of heads in this room who are nodding along as you were talking. And so, again, I just wanted to give you the opportunity to share that. I saw it on social media over the weekend. It's very well said. In entirely other news involving Cam Newton, in an interview with the Boston Herald, Cam was asked, among other things, about the possibility of retiring, and his response was, quote, hell no, I can't go out like that. I hear all of that talk. My pride won't allow me to do it. There aren't 32 guys better than me. So let's quickly touch on that if I can. Jeff Darlington, what, if anything, should we expect the market to look like for Cam Newton this offseason?
Well, I expect him to feel exactly that, but outside of the vacuum of that mindset, he has to still remember last year he went through several months before he got picked up with the Patriots. There wasn't much that changed this season other than being a really good teammate and staying manageably healthy through the season. So I would say that he's going to be waiting a little bit if he expects to get a starting job in the NFL, waiting probably all the way until August.
Mike Tannenbaum, if you're the general manager of a team that has an opening at quarterback, how are you viewing Cam right now?
He's competing. I'm not giving him the job. I think an ideal situation is Denver. Go in and probably back up Drew Lock initially. Drew Lock is not entrenched, and get healthy, rehab. He just wasn't the same guy after surgery. It looks like he needs more time to get to where he is. So I don't think there's going to be a starting job just given to him in free agency.
You know, I feel the need to say this out loud because Cam Newton has been so well known for so long. He's still only 31 years old. He'll be 32 by the time next season begins. So it is not, to Mike's point, it's not as though he doesn't have some time to still try and put this back together. Okay, we'll see. As we continue, coming up, there is one team that absolutely has to find a way to land Deshaun Watson. We will tell you which team that is and why as we continue. And we'll do this. Little sneaky Hembo time, and he's calling out Tannenbaum today. Which is the only NFL franchise to never have a 4,000-yard passer in a season? That's the question. Tannenbaum takes a shot at the answer next. Get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, this is a good one from Sneaky Hembo. Which is the only NFL franchise, Mike Tannenbaum, to never have a 4,000-yard passer in a season?
Well, I was thinking initially Houston, Jacksonville, Carolina. Haven't been around very long, but Hembo's sneaky for a reason. I know there's a team we're going to be talking about coming up here, so I'm thinking Matt Schaub's probably done. I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears.
That is correct. And he didn't get you. And I got it right for the same reason. Think about this number. The Chicago Bears are a charter franchise of the National Football League. They were founded in 1920 as the Decatur Staleys. And they've never had a 4,000-yard passer. Well done, Mike Tannenbaum. All right, we have that coming up. Plus, we also are talking about LeBron. At 36, are the Lakers in the schedule asking too much from the King? We will talk about that with this man. Jalen Rose joins the party coming up in just a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Well, we're back on Get Up, and the Houston Texans have said publicly they do not want to trade Deshaun Watson. But a source tells our Texans reporter Sarah Barshop the team has had internal conversations about trade partners and what the position would look like without Deshaun Watson, which feels like the first step towards what may be inevitable. And so, Lewis Riddick, you were on my radio show last week, and you gave me one team that you think should and probably will go all in on trying to trade for Deshaun Watson. Who is that team?
Yeah, look, the Chicago Bears, I think right now are at the point of no return, especially when you're talking about the current regime of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, the head coach and general manager. Look, I know what Matt Nagy feels about you know, the quarterback position. I know how he evaluated that quarterback class that included Deshaun Watson, that included Patrick Mahomes. And I know that he felt as though they truly, and people throw around this word a little bit too much, but he felt as though they truly were transcendent individuals, that they could make football teams better, offensively and defensively, and make coaches, front offices, groundskeepers, everyone better. And I know he feels that way about Deshaun Watson. What does he have to lose at this point? This is a make-or-break year for him. It's a make-or-break year for Ryan Pace as well. Whatever needs to be put on the table in order for them to go ahead and see if they can secure a guy who can truly make everyone else around him better, I think they need to do. I think they're going to do. It's just going to be a matter of whether or not Nick Caserio and the Houston Texans want to play ball.
It's worth reminding people, in case you do not know, that while Nagy was not the coach in Chicago at the time, Ryan Pace was the general manager when Deshaun Watson was in the draft, and he took Mitchell Trubisky instead. Jeff Darlington, let's go back to the other side of this here. Sarah Barshop reporting that maybe they're starting to talk about this in Houston. Does this, I use the word inevitable. Is there inevitability right now to Deshaun Watson getting traded? And if so, before the draft?
It feels inevitable to basically everybody at this point, except for the Texans, who, to your point, seem to be coming around maybe a little bit to that reality. What's interesting, I was talking to an exec for a different team, and he was talking about team-building strategies. He talked about the idea of taking advantage of another team's vulnerability in order to get the most in exchange for something. That is where the Texans ultimately sit, to Lewis's point about the Bears. So they are in a situation where, even if they don't want to trade Deshaun Watson, at least they can start to look at the landscape and say, look at the Bears, look at that desperation, how do we take advantage of that? So it's time for them to wrap their minds around the possibility that, yes, they're going to have to get rid of Deshaun Watson, and they might as well do so by getting a boatload of picks in return for him.
Mike T, take me through how this works. You were a general manager in two different places. Like, if the Texans are starting to come around to this, and you're Ryan Pace, who's calling who? How are these conversations being facilitated, and what is actually said?
Yeah, if I'm Ryan Pace, I'm calling Nick Caserio every single day. As Lewis mentioned, I am not getting off the phone. I am giving 3 first-round picks, the Sears Tower, Roquan Smith, Khalil Mack, whatever it takes. A year ago, Jason Light was on the ropes in Tampa Bay. Tom Brady saved his job. Now Jason Light's an all-time great. This is the same play that Ryan Pace could run to save his job. Whatever it takes, get the deal done. Don't get off the phone. And I think if I'm Nick Caserio, Chicago's a great place to send him. It's in the NFC. I would get 3 first-round picks, a young pressure player, like I said, maybe Roquan Smith, and cut your losses. So if I'm Ryan Pace, I am calling every day, Greeny. I don't have anything to lose but my job, so I am all in on getting Deshaun Watson.
I get that part. I get every part of it. The Texans, however, if they're looking to get a young quarterback back to start building around, the Bears don't have a high enough pick that you're going to assure yourself of getting that. So you look at, I'm just saying, the Jets, the Dolphins, some of the others that are picking high in the draft. Mm. If that's a priority for the Texans, I'm just saying that would be one consideration. Guys, let's leave that there for the moment. More football as we go. But I want to get to the NBA game of the night last night. And this was fascinating. Wizards, Lakers. Good opportunity for the Lakers at home to get right after dropping a couple in the absence of AD. Well, think again. End of the game, a buck 20 to go. The Lakers are down three. And that's LeBron, and it's no good, but we're going to work it around, and it's going to be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope who ties it. He had 21. We're all even at 111. Next, Wizards possession, Russell Westbrook to Denny Avdija, the rookie with the three, and the Wizards retake the lead. 13 seconds left. Lakers are down by two. LeBron is so strong. Look at him go to the hole. Yes, plus the foul. LeBron had 31. Bench loves it, but they won't love this. LeBron to the line. Misses the foul shot. So we're all tied. Final seconds. Six to play. Bradley Beal, the NBA's leading scorer. The step back for the win. No good. Overtime we go. Tied at 115. Under a minute left now in the extra session. Wizards are up a deuce. Bradley Beal working on Alex Caruso. That's not a good matchup for Caruso. Beal had 33. Wizards by four. Next, Laker possession. LeBron, handoff. KCP, three. Again, Lakers within one. 14 seconds left. Wizards, same score. Russell Westbrook, yes, 32 points, 14 boards for Westbrook. He would miss the foul shot, so the Wizards lead is three. LeBron for the tie. No good. They would get another shot. That's a tough look for Kyle Kuzma, and there it goes. Wizards get the win. Lakers drop another. And afterwards, LeBron was being asked about load management.
I mean, I'm resting now. I'm sitting here talking to you guys. I'm resting when I get in my car and head home. I'm resting when I get home. I'll rest tomorrow. You know, I think this whole narrative of, you know, LeBron needs more rest, or I should take more rest, or I should take time here, has become a lot bigger than what it actually really is. I've never talked about it. I don't talk about it. I don't believe in it. You know, we all need more rest. I mean, this is a fast turnaround from last season. And we all wish we can have more rest, but you know, I'm here to work, and I'm here to punch my clock in and be available to my teammates.
So that's what he said. Here's a man who never rests. The great Jalen Rose is back with me here. And so, Jalen, you hear it. It's everywhere, including on Jalen and Jacoby and everywhere else. We're talking about, without Anthony Davis, is it too much to put on 36-year-old's LeBron's plate right now? Do you believe they should be considering load managing LeBron?
Not only should they be considering it, but you're going to see it happen. And here's why. Because without Anthony Davis, the Lakers, they're an average team in a Western Conference. They're winning by 17 against Washington in that game, Greeny. And the plays that the Lakers have run the most when they're at their most effective is LeBron ISO, AD post up, AD and LeBron pick and roll. Well, you can't run two or three of those things without AD. And the LeBron ISO thing, he is in his 18th season, 16th season, 18th season, 36 years of age. And he's the primary ball handler and creator for that squad. And not only are they without Anthony Davis, they're without Schroeder also. But this also is a graduation of what happened from last year. See, the Lakers won the championship in the bubble. And it was a quick turnaround. It was only 71 days. And I'm going to just throw something out there. It hasn't necessarily been said publicly, but I would not be surprised if this weekend, when the All-Star game and the festivities are played, instead of the players returning on the 10th, guys like LeBron James and those other 23 All-Stars may try to get the league to consider giving them next weekend off as well. Mm. LeBron had a short turnaround, Greeny, and at the press conference, he's going to say he wasn't fatigued. But watching the basketball game and watching his shots hit the side of the backboard and fall out of bounds, that's fatigue.
I agree completely. It's something definitely that is worth watching. You know how I feel about load management. I want to see him on the floor, but I get it. And the schedule in the second half is going to be very compressed. So that's something worth watching. Meantime, I wanted to ask you about this. Lewis Riddick just offered some really interesting and insightful comments about the young man, the football player who was at a camp and got into this trash-talking spat with Cam Newton. And I know that you heard that. And I think everyone would be really well served by hearing your thoughts on what happened there and what it means.
when I saw not only this topic, Greeny, but the Deion Sanders topic, it reminded me of those are a couple of reasons why I actually got into this industry. To not only give a former player's perspective, but also somebody that's actually from the hood that gets a chance to talk on national television. And I've been in both of those guys' spots. I've been the teenager at somebody's camp. I've also been the adult at a camp where people trying to heckle me. And so here's what I want to point out, and this is really loaded. First and foremost, again, I'm glad the young man apologized. But if you, as an adult, see that video, and the first thing you say is that young man should not be talking to Cam Newton like that because, and then all of the things you say are about what Cam Newton has accomplished in football, you're also part of the problem. Don't tell me about him going undefeated at Auburn. Don't tell me about him being the MVP of the NFL. You're part of the problem. Don't judge him by his accolades. What about the fact that there was an adult being disrespected by a minor? That was the problem. And it seemed like that minor, who had an opportunity to be at a 7-on-7 camp, should have been doing everything he could to soak up the knowledge, the game, the opportunity. Instead, and we all have been there as teenagers, he took the opportunity to try to be the class clown. And so when we start to place our value on how much we've accomplished versus who we are as human beings. See, it's a what have you done for me lately world, Greeny. And he's talking to Cam Newton like that man hasn't accomplished anything in life. And that's an extremely successful young, that's an extremely successful black man. And he's doing what he can to give back to the Charlotte community where he played quarterback for so many years. He don't have to be there. He had a bad season. And I want to also say this. The young man told him, you're a free agent. You are about to be poor. Now, let me bring in the money part. So many times we like to place people's values on their accolades in America and how much money they make. And Cam actually did it in reverse. At the end, when he was asking the young man, and follow this, where's your dad? I hope the young man was raised by his dad. But how about this, Greeny? Cam probably didn't know the young man may or may not have a father that raised him. So maybe he was touching a nerve that he didn't even realize he was touching. And then last, because I grew up without a father, I know that. And then lastly, when Cam retorted to the young man, you heard what he said? I'm rich. I'm rich. That ain't the necessarily retort that you want. So they were, theory, were doing the same thing to one another, and I'm glad it got ironed out. But the underlying theory is respect your elders, value your life, and don't place who's successful on how much money you think they make or how many accolades that they've achieved.
Now, that's beautifully said, and I'm so glad you said it. And just quickly, off what we know has been a very difficult week for you, nothing but love to you and your family, Jalen, from all of us here and everybody
Thank
at
you.
ESPN.
I love you, brother.
You're the best.
Thank
Absolutely
you. I
the
appreciate
best.
The love and the support.
All right, it's Jalen Rose with us here with his thoughts, and I'm so glad that we said that. Basketball, we've got great games coming your way tomorrow night. NBA Wednesday doubleheader tomorrow night. Steph and the Warriors facing the Pacers at 7:30 Eastern. Then you got the top two teams in the West, LeBron and the Jazz in Utah. Coverage starts with Stephen A's pregame sports center at 7 o'clock Eastern time. All right, we'll break on that thought. Coming up, one of the really big decisions in the NFL will be in Green Bay. Could one of Aaron Rodgers' biggest weapons be on his way out the door? The answer to that question is next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, what a Big Ten College Hoop doubleheader we have for you coming up on Thursday night. Number 3, Michigan, hosting Luka Garza, and number 11, Iowa. That's 7 Eastern, then to East Lansing for number 4, Ohio State and Michigan State. Both games are on ESPN, and on the ESPN app. And with that, I'm delighted to welcome you back to our studio. I'm Greeny. This is Get Up on ESPN. We're with you commercial free now for the next 12 minutes and change. And that is when First Take takes over at the top of the hour. And they've got a lot to talk about, too. Is LeBron James playing too many minutes? Should the Lakers be worried about it? Stephen A., Max, and Molly will talk about that and more at the top of the hour. We're commercial free until then. Here comes Lewis.
I was going to give him a pass because he don't even know how dumb that was. You were the number one overall pick in the draft. Well, if somebody has to go, it's going to be you.
Wait, no, let me finish.
Well, hold on. With that comes the expectation that you're going to have a QBR better than five.
Get that. Hold on. I'm not even listening.
I anticipate this getting ugly.
We call this the Chronicles of Riddick, and because A, we love the name, and B, because we love the insight, as Lewis will go around the league with a couple of different thoughts, and this is going to be a quarterback edition. So, first off, Lewis, will Aaron Rodgers get more help this offseason?
Yeah, Greeny, I think he will. I think he will get more help, particularly on the perimeter, at the wide receiver position, and in the slot in particular, which is really where he needs it. He needs somebody to pair with Devontae Adams. And this draft is just so deep with players who fit the bill of exactly what they're looking for. On your screen right now, Kadarius Toney from the University of Florida, an absolute playmaker who just tore it up down at the Senior Bowl. You've got Amari Rodgers from Clemson, who is another one of those guys who would fit the bill as well. And then Dwayne Eskridge from Western Michigan. They just have so many guys that are out there that are available for them that I think they'll get one of them.
Next up will be Ben Roethlisberger. Should he keep playing in 2021?
Yeah, I don't think without a doubt he should keep playing. Look, when we talked to him just this past year for Monday Night Football, Ben sounded like somebody who really thought that he could play many more years in the NFL. He didn't sound like someone who was burnt out, someone who really was seeing the end of his career coming. I think obviously they have to figure out what the financial situation is going to be for him in Pittsburgh and what that's going to look like. But I think you're going to see Ben for a couple more years in the NFL.
And then one more. If you were in the Browns front office, would you sign Baker Mayfield to a long-term deal now?
There's no doubt about that at all. Look, he has found his niche right now with Kevin Stefanski in this play-action-oriented type of offense that really runs through the running game, and off of the play-action passing game comes the kind of production that you're looking for out of Baker Mayfield. He's not someone who's just going to be able to transcend his surroundings and really make everyone else better in the sense of, you know, a true, you know, generational type of franchise quarterback. But this is a perfect fit for him in Cleveland. And I think they understand that. I think they like where they're heading. There's no way I'd let him get out of the door. They have a good thing going in Cleveland. They found someone who can win them football games and play at a high level when need be. I wouldn't chance that and try starting over at all. I wouldn't mess with this in any way, shape, or form. We see what's happening in the other teams that don't really know what their next best alternative is when they go ahead and they let their starting quarterback out the door. I don't think Cleveland will make the same mistake.
Understood. But just to be clear, we're talking about signing an extension. He just finished his third year. They can pick up the fifth-year option, which means just by doing that, they have him guaranteed for two more years. So, but we're talking about what they did in L.A. with the Rams and Jared Goff, ripped up his deal, did an extension. What they did in Philadelphia with Carson Wentz, ripped up his deal, did an extension. We saw how those turned out as well. No concern with that, Lewis?
Now, you know what, for me, as long as it makes sense for the club and they can minimize their risk and protect themselves on the downside and not go overboard now and not sign them to a market-setting contract, yeah, I would be proactive in this situation. I think it kind of shows good faith on the part of the team. I think Baker has adjusted to what have been some very challenging circumstances throughout his career, and he has taken a lot of heat for some of the things that he has done that really, quite honestly, aren't just necessarily all on him. So I think this is one of those where, as long as the relationship is healthy, I would be proactive in this situation because, again, I think he has settled in nicely to what Kevin Stefanski wants to do offensively.
Jeff Darlington, what are we hearing out of there? Is that the expectation? I know it's not this week, but should we be expecting that?
It is the expectation, but that's generally what we hear from any team. We heard it from the Dallas Cowboys for several years, but it does bring up an interesting point around the NFL. We want to criticize the Rams and the Eagles for paying Wentz and Goff and ultimately having to unload them, but then we want to also criticize the Cowboys for not doing the same with Dak. It's a very interesting situation teams now face with this fourth and fifth year of a rookie deal. So it's a tough spot for the Browns to be in. To Lewis's point, if you can find a nice deal that both sides agree on, absolutely, you lock them up.
Look, I mean, maybe the point that you're making here is The key is to get it right. The key is, so you can get it wrong either way. The key is to get it right.
That's a good way of putting
it's very easy for me sitting here to say, Mike Tannenbaum, if you were sitting there making this decision, what would you do?
I would not extend him. He's a guy that is under contract this year. The option should be about $22 million next year. And the year after, you could franchise him. So you control him for the next 3 years. When you look at his classmates like Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, those are much harder players to replace. Kevin Stefanski has done a great job. I would proceed with caution, Greeny. And as you mentioned, Goff and Wentz are cautionary tales. I would be patient if I was Cleveland and see this go for at least another year.
All right, let's see where they wind up going with all of that. Meanwhile, this week is all about the franchise tag, so we will play a game called To Tag or Not To Tag. That is the question. Mike T, should the Lions tag Kenny Golladay?
Absolutely. I would tag him and extend him. He is a core young player who's ascending. He should be there with Dan Campbell and hopefully Jared Goff for a number of years, but you can't let somebody like him leave the building.
Yeah, he's someone who would be highly sought after if he became a free agent. Lewis, how about the Bucs and their young receiver, Chris Godwin? To tag or not to tag?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this one. I think I would probably err on the side of caution and not tag him. I would want to extend him and get him back in the fold, but I think they have other players on this roster right now, namely in fifth round pick from 2020, Tyler Johnson, that could fill that role. And given the fact that they have other, you know, fish to fry, so to speak, as far as their free agent signings that they need to get signed, I think I would really go ahead and put all my eggs in the Shaq Barrett basket right now.
And then let me go, Mike T, to the Packers. Should they franchise tag Aaron Jones?
They should not. This is all about resource allocation. He's a great player. You got to go with A.J. Dillon, the second-year player from Boston College, and then maybe bring Jamal Williams back at a lower price. Even though Jones is a great player, it's too expensive for the running back position, and you got a really good player behind him.
Yeah, so we are back to that again. Let me come out and talk about it for a minute here because we know how valuable he is, and we know that that is a team thinking Super Bowl thoughts. But, Lewis, it is back to the whole should you pay a running back conversation, even in a one-year kind of window, as Mike is talking about. That's where we are in the NFL right now. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to try and buck that trend and kind of like zig when everyone else is zagging when it just makes sense considering that, you know, your next best alternative at running back always seems to be right around the corner. And that's not to be disrespectful or to disparage Aaron Jones in any way, because having get to see him play live a couple different times, this kid is special. He is special, but they have other players in the fold. And I can just tell you this, Jamal Williams and A.J. Dillon are two guys that I know Matt LaFleur likes a lot. I think they are people that can really do a lot of the things that they want to do within the context of that offense as far as this run-pass ratio. And in that regard, I think Aaron Jones is going to be one of those guys who's going to wind up being more valuable to someone else than to the Green Bay Packers from a contract perspective, or at least that's the way it seems to be heading. So, I mean, look, that's just the nature of the position at running back. And again, I have nothing but respect for Aaron Jones, but I think that's just the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future as far as valuing running backs is concerned.
Yeah, he's a great player, but Jeff, should we expect him to be on a different team next year?
I think the franchise tag is so interesting with running backs. You know, you do get 1 year out of a guy who's going to get beaten up pretty good. I mean, but we've seen the cautionary tales again. Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, we can go to Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he ultimately held out. And that's a cautionary tale on that side of things. So I do anticipate seeing Aaron Jones on the Packers, but to Mike and Lewis's point, there's a really a lot of interesting scenarios for the Packers to go down here.
Wow, the life of the running back is a complicated one in the National Football League. Okay, yeah, one
sure
last order of business today. We wanted to end this with a little bit of fun. So there are many people who call Bill Belichick a genius, but Cam Newton has offered a different word to describe his thoughts having played for one season for Bill Belichick. Here is a direct quote from Cam Newton. He said, "I think Bill Belichick is the most misunderstood person in all of sports. He is dope as blank." Now, we have a lot of personal connection to Bill Belichick today. And Lewis Riddick, I will start with you. You played for him back in the day in Cleveland. How dope is Bill Belichick?
Look, man, I don't know how to characterize how dope he is. I just know this. All the things that, you know, when we're just kind of sitting around having a beer, having a drink, if we were, you know, as you're going to talk about with Mike Tannenbaum, but we're sitting in a sauna just talking, you know, just talking mess about whatever it is, Bill could hang with all of us, man. He could talk with all of us about all the same things we talk about. And you know how it gets going when us guys get together. So, look, he's a man's man. I mean, look at that picture right there. I mean,
that's pretty good.
Look, I have nothing but respect for the guy. I don't know what Cam exactly was talking about, but I'm not going to go against it. You know, I have the utmost respect for the guy.
We're all thrown by the magazine cover, Lewis. Don't feel bad. I didn't know what to say about it either. Yeah. What you're referring to is that Mike Tannenbaum, you have acknowledged on this program that you have indeed saunaed with Bill Belichick. That is a verb. And so I would ask you the same question. You worked with him and for him. How dope is he?
There is some dopeness about Coach Belichick, and I agree with what Lewis said. You can have a beer with him. He is a really thoughtful, funny guy. And in all seriousness, there is a nurturing side to Coach Belichick. Me and countless others, he has given tremendous opportunities in our careers. So in all seriousness, there is a nurturing side, but he will chop it up and have a beer, have wings. There is that side to him. It's hard to see, but when you're there, it's a lot of fun.
So let me just make sure I'm understanding this. We were trying to figure out how to quantify the dopeness of Bill Belichick. The closest thing we could come to video was that when he had his dog sitting there when they were doing the draft, and you just described the dopest act you could think of with him as eating wings. Now, by that standard, I'm the dopest person you've ever come across, and I don't have a lot of dopeness going here. Jeff Darlington, your thoughts.
This conversation is, by definition, not dope. But I will say the same story I told in the last hour. I'm at a Patriots after party after a Super Bowl. Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola being pretty dope, spraying champagne all over people, because that's what apparently dope people do. Julian Edelman heads toward Bill Belichick with the champagne bottle to spray him. Danny Amendola stops him in his tracks and says, "You cannot do that." Julian Edelman looks at him and says, "What's he going to do, fire me?" And Danny Amendola looks him dead in the eye and says, "Yes." And that is exactly what Bill Belichick is. Does that make him dope? Perhaps in some capacity. But ultimately, Bill Belichick is a football coach, dope or not.
No question. The dopitude at this point is well spoken for. Guys, thanks for getting up. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.